Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, Sports Auto. Mike, Max, Dave Mona, and Sid Hartman, the legend. He had a great time the other night at U.S. Bank Stadium, spending time with Dan Gavitt, who runs the NCAA tournament for the NCAA. And he was out here checking out sight lines and everything else because we build towards the Final Four, but we had a nice visit with his basketball background and everything else. Dan, thank you for joining us this morning.
Morning, Mike. Great to be with you.
What was your takeaway as you walked the stadium, and what do you look for, and what did you see?
Well, we were, first of all, very, very pleased to see college basketball in U.S. Bank Stadium. The staff there, Patrick Talty, the general manager, did a fantastic job with the weekend's events, and all of our friends from the Minnesota local organizing committee, Kate Mortensen, the president and CEO there, and the chairs of the MLOC, as well as University of Minnesota, and their great staff. So it was a good opportunity for us just to see all of our partners and imagine what April is going to be like. It's a great building. It's a spectacular building, as fans of Minneapolis, St. Paul area know, and it's going to be an awesome experience for the student athletes in April for the Final Four.
Didn't they have to spend about $4 million for something to fix the stadium for the NCAA?
The drapes, I think.
The drapes, yes. Well, part of the bid specifications for the Final Four are that the building has to be dark for both games, of course. With the later light that time of year and the earlier tip-off of the first semifinal game, with all the glass in that spectacular stadium, there needed to be a darkening solution, which they were committed to when they received the bid back in 2014. And so that's in place. They've done a great job of coming up with a creative solution, not just for our event, but I think for many events that will follow that will have the same requirements. So we were very confident that will be not a problem, and we appreciate the extra effort.
Dan, I had a chance to be there on Friday night. I thought they'd created a really nice, intimate feeling court at the end of the floor. For a lot of people who were either there or saw that on TV, can you talk about what will be different? Because the court will be in an entirely different position for the Final Four.
Sure. So, yeah, as you note, the court was in the end zone, essentially, for Friday night. For the Final Four, the court will be right in the middle of the stadium, right in the middle of the football field at the 50-yard line, and we'll have more than 70,000 fans that will be in attendance. So it will look and feel quite different. And yet, because of the way our seating system works, kind of above even the lower bowl of the stadium, it will feel somewhat intimate for a massive stadium like that, because the seats will go right up to the court. There will be no moats, per se, that will be around the court. The seating will go right up to the court, and there will be, like I said, over 70,000 fans, hopefully, that will be in attendance and enjoying a spectacular event.
You're going to have 70,000 seats in that place?
Yes, sir. Well, it'll actually be closer to 72,000, probably. So the capacity for the Final Four in these big buildings is actually a little bit larger than it is for football, because we put seats on the football field that go right up to the court itself. And so, we are anticipating as many as 72,000 fans or so for the Final Four.
Dan, that was Sid Hartman, the legend, and I warned you about him, but you already knew of him, and he is insisting on sitting in the upper deck this year because he's always had those courtside passes. He says he wants to experience it like the fans. So just remember that when you start putting the credential list together. But we had Richard Pitino on earlier, and you and I talked about this the other night. It is not the RPI anymore. It is a more complicated formula now to get to the NCAA tournament called the NET. Explain that and how it pertains to it, and basically, you know, you're encouraging teams to play a good schedule and all those things. I think it's been good for college basketball, but explain how you try to qualify for the NCAA tournament.
Well, you're right. There's a new tool this year that the committee will use to sort the teams and rank them, but it's only a tool. It hasn't changed the process. The process is much more comprehensive and broad than just one analytic, but whereas the RPI, which was 37 years old, was a results-oriented only analytic that only took into consideration who you beat and where you beat them and what the final result was. This actually takes into consideration many other things, such as a team's offensive and defensive efficiency, some level of scoring margin to determine, you know, how excellent team has been over the course of the year. So it has more of a predictiveness to it than the RPI ever did. There was no predictive element to the RPI. So it's a much more contemporary and sophisticated metric, which is a good thing. It's much of an improvement for the tournament.
We're talking to Dan Gavitt. Dan, many years ago, I was involved in bringing to the first Final Four here to Minnesota. At that time, with the emergence of the mega facilities like we're seeing now, there was discussion of some places even talking about putting screens on the back of bleachers and building in seating for people who would have no real view of the game but would be in the facility. Is that discussion gone away, or is people still looking at that? Because a capacity would be even greater if somebody considered something like that.
Yeah, no, we haven't had any of those discussions at all recently, and we feel fortunate and blessed that, that so many fans want to be there to experience the Final Four in person, upwards of over 70,000, as we mentioned. But we do want them to experience it, and experience it, of course, means that you're seeing it live, even if it's from far away. And so we haven't had any of those discussions, although the Warriors recently, as I think you know, have introduced a ticket. Whereby you get into the Warriors facility and experience the atmosphere and yet not see the game live. So, you know, if that becomes something in the industry that becomes more common, I guess it's something we could consider. But right now, for us, it's all about the direct experience of fans taking in the game on a first-hand basis.
72,000 is enough. Sid?
I don't think anybody has attended more NCAA Final Four than I have. It's such a great event, unbelievable. And, how do you work that thing out with the financially with the U.S. Bank?
Well, it's there's a very competitive bid process that goes into this. We awarded this Final Four back in 2014, and we've awarded Final Fours out through now 2026. We go that far out. There's about 10 or so cities that have the facilities, hotels, and convention center space to host the Final Four. So it's a select group, but it's a very competitive process. And, there's a lot of detail that goes into what's required. But for a world-class event that's two different days of competition and a long weekend of activities, I think it's a very good investment for a community to make. The Final Four is nowhere near as expensive to host, for example, as the Super Bowl is, or even the college football playoff. And yet, you know, you have this incredible economic activity over the course of an entire long weekend of visitors from around the world and certainly around the country to come and experience everything that's great about the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota. And so we're excited to bring it back for the first time in our 18 years, I guess.
Wow, that goes quick. Hey, Dan, thank you so much for giving us some time today. And I look forward to visiting with you as you make your visits leading up to the Final Four. Appreciate it very much.
Appreciate you guys and your coverage of this event. And we're thrilled to be coming to Minneapolis. Can't wait to get there in April. And appreciate all the great work going on in the community. Have
is
a great
Tom
day.
George says he's 11?
He is, yeah. He's doing quite well. He lives in Florida now. And he's retired, but he has a son who's a sophomore in high school, so that's keeping him busy.
Wow.
Going to his events. And, I'll tell him that you're asking for him, Sid. He's a great man.
Yeah, we worked a lot with Tom up here. Thanks so much for appearing. And when you get back here, Sid will probably send you to Murray's, get you a certificate. One of the best restaurants in town here. Thanks so much.
I've been. I'd love to go back.
Sounds
thanks,
good.
Dan
Gavitt. All right, more sports right after this. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike. Okay, we're going to be back here for just a brief minute. Let me tell you how things are going to play out. Lou Nanny's going to join us in about 3 or 4 minutes from right now to talk hockey. After that, we're going to talk to Mike Zimmer, and after that, we're going to take your phone calls. So if you want to get queued up for the phone call segment, this would be a good time to call us. The number is 651-989-9226, 989-9226. Remember, there'll be two segments before those phone calls. Also, we had a text message in response to that last call, or the last interview, said they had a raised floor on Friday. Will they have a raised floor for the Final Four? I was in a section where that question came up. I was told by somebody who was involved with the setup, the answer to that is yes. And the reason is they have so much cabling that they run underneath the floor that they will indeed have a raised floor. Now, that was secondhand, but I believe that to be the correct information. So give us a call now. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk hockey with Lou Nanny, football with Mike Zimmer, and your phone calls. That's the next three segments as you listen to the Sports Huddle with Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, we are back, and when it's time to talk hockey, Mike and I just throw up our hands and we lateral the puck to Sid Hartman.
Yep.
Sid, hockey question.
What's wrong with the Wild?
I knew it. Lou, I'm sure shocked by that one.
Yeah, well, they have lost three in a row, but at least last night they played really a great game. They had three fluky goals, three deflections that went in the net, and those kind of things happen when you're not winning games. You know, you get some bad bounces, bad breaks, and you just got to work your way out of it. And last night, the good thing about it was it looked like they were working their way out of it because they really dominated the game against Toronto. Unfortunately, they didn't put enough pucks in the net, and Toronto got those three deflections. But when you go through a season, 82 games, Sid, everybody's going to go through some soft spots, and the Wild are going through one right now.
Lou, I had a chance to be at the Gopher hockey game on Friday night. Crowd filled in. When the puck was dropped, there was hardly anybody there. Maybe got to 50%. What are the Gophers going to need to do from a marketing standpoint to get general fans back in there and to get students in there?
Well, I think that the students will come. I'm not as concerned about them. You know, over Thanksgiving week, they didn't have many, and then it's just sort of a carryover this week. But they've been, earlier in the year, they've been there in larger numbers. It's the main seats that are sold to corporations. You know, a lot of times corporations, they aren't as diligent about getting rid of their tickets. And then when they do, sometimes people, they got the tickets and they haven't paid for them, but they have the opportunity to go and something else might come up and they don't even think about it and don't go to the game. A lot of those, that's why they announced the crowds. It's so big at, you know, 8,000 and there's not, you know, 4,500 maybe in there, 5,000. So we got to get those people that have bought the tickets to make certain that they're used. And if they're not going to be used, somehow get the university to find out and have the university use them for Boy Scout groups or hockey groups, whatever, you know, kids that will get their parents there and get them back going to the games because the games are really fun. And as you saw that Friday night, they had an overtime game then and they had another one last night. And they just got to get people back to the arena.
If you were, Sid, let me ask one hockey question, okay? Louis, if you're the Minnesota Wild right now and you're going down the stretch and you want to be a playoff team, it looks like you can, you got to make decisions. Trade deadline coming and going. Who would be the most likely sought-after players for the Minnesota Wild that other teams would want and that you may be able to move to get better?
Well, I don't know that they'd move Staal because everybody would want Staal because he hasn't got a long contract.
Sure.
A shorter term, plus he's playing so well.
But you don't want to give that piece up, do you?
No, I wouldn't give him. I'm just saying, people are going to want. That's who they're going to want. And of course, you'd always want a Granlund, which they're not going to give up. The most tradable guys they have, and I'm going to say you got to get away from the defense because the defense, you know, they got three guys that people would take in a heartbeat there. But because Suter's got a no trade, but then you got Dumba that everybody would want, and then you got Spurgeon everybody would want, and Brodin too. But you don't want to give one of your top four up. So the most marketable things you're going to get people after, it's going to be Coyle and Niederreiter. And you're not going to give up Zucker. He had 33 goals last year. He's got 8 now, which is essentially on a pace of 30, 31. And it's just because he's missed a lot of goals. So that's what you're going to see people go after, and that's who's probably the most marketable.
How about the recruits? Are they getting the Gophers getting the good recruits in the States?
Yeah,
so they
are.
Can win?
Well, yeah. Bob Moscow had some people change their mind that or going somewhere else. And one of the big ones is Craig Johnson's son, played out in California.
Yeah, I hear he's a beast, huh?
He is, and he's going to be good. I mean, Bob's really got a couple of good guys that he's had changed their mind, and they'll be coming to the university eventually. But if you looked at the games like these this past weekend, last night, Ohio State, to me, is as good a team as there is in the country right now. And I think that, you know, they went to the Frozen Four last year. I think they'll probably go again this year. They got 10 guys that are seniors, and most of them are 24 years old. They're an older, you know, senior-laden class, and that's what eventually you'll see Bob try to do at the university, get guys play longer in junior, be older and stronger and more physically ready to go into the kind of, you know, playoff-bound team you have to be when you're fighting in college. Those big, strong college kids that have been around for a while seem to prevail a lot.
Is that Steve Rolick, you've known for years, of course. He played at Hill Murray and was an assistant at Wisconsin and UMD. Is that his theory, or did it just work out that way?
No, that's his theory. And most coaches, that's their theory. You know, they know that if they're going to win eventually, they got to get a group of kids that are going to stay around and develop and be there 3-4 years and be bigger, stronger, and older. And if you look at some of the teams that have won the title, even going back to when Union beat Minnesota, that was an older team. And those guys were 24 years old. And that seems to be what most of the teams are doing right now.
Louis, just going back to the Wild for a minute, looking at their schedule this week, I remember a lot of conversations with you in the North Star days. They head into Canada, and they've got 3 games in 4 nights at Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. That's a rigorous part of any schedule.
Well, you know, Dave, it is, but unfortunately, everybody's got too many of them. And the reason why, you have to remember, they got the All-Star break, and then when they went from an All-Star game format, which is a regular hockey game, to 3-on-3 playoffs, the NHL made that decision unilaterally without the Players Association, and they announced it. Well, and the Players Association came back and said, we want something for that. And so what did they take? They took an extra 4 days off. So every team, besides having that week off if they're not playing the All-Star game, then they got another 4 days
yep.
off. And so when you try and cramp the same amount of games in a tighter schedule, that's what's happening. You're having many more 3-on-4 nights. You're even having some 4-on-5 nights, which we would never take. And you got too many clubs that have to have that during the year, because when you look at it, on top of everything else, all those buildings are being used. You know, the Wild buildings, over 200 nights a year they're using for some things. So now you take away a lot of those other nights. So you got to cramp in games in a real shorter amount of time, and that's what's happened to the hockey schedule. And that's why you see, I think, an increasing amount of injuries, because guys are tired, they're playing tough schedules, they're playing a physical game in a much shorter time, so you're going to have some guys getting hurt, and that's what happens.
But that 4 nights off, when it comes, it seems like, why are you doing this? It seems like it just disrupts the flow of the season. It doesn't seem like anybody really welcomes it.
Mackie, you're saying the same thing I said. I said, if I was player rep at that time, they said, we have this opportunity, I'd say, we're turning it down. Our team's turning it down. All it means, we still got to play the same amount of games. We don't need another 4 days off, because we're going to be more tired.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a tendency to have more injuries.
Lou Nanny, thank you very much for taking time and for being on this show. Tim Murray loves it when you come in and rest and eat on the best steaks in town. Thank you.
I enjoy it. Thanks very much. Nice being with you guys.
Hey, Lou, thanks so much. That's Lou Nanny. Well, Mike Zimmer follows as you're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid, Dave, and Mike. Well, we've had some Viking talk on and off over the last 2 hours, but we've not yet heard from the head coach with his thoughts on the eve of this 3:20 kickoff today against New England. Sid got up with Mike Zimmer. Let's listen in.
What time do you play to Tom Brady?
I think I've played him 4 times, maybe. We lost to him 12-0 when I was in Dallas. We lost to him big opening game of the year one time. We beat him in Cincinnati. I think it was 14-7 or something, and then we got beat when I was here 2 years ago, the day after Adrian got suspended.
How tough is he, the defense?
He's tough. They do a good job. They do a good job with their scheme, using their players. The players fit the scheme very well. You know, they run the ball very good. Their offensive line are tough guys.
Is he tough rolling out as any quarterback?
He doesn't roll out much. He moves in the pocket really well, so he avoids the rush and moves in the pocket. He'll scramble when he has to, but he doesn't really want to scramble. But he's extremely accurate, got a big arm, reads coverages very well.
How's your relationship with Belichick?
You know, I've talked to him on the phone once, but other than that, I mean, you know, I've seen him at owners' meetings and things like that. And say hello, that's about it.
Talk about that big tight end they've got.
Gronkowski.
Very tough.
Yeah, Gronkowski's a big, strong, physical guy, does a great job in coverage, getting good matchups, really good 50-50 ball guy. Yeah, blocks well.
What kind of shape are you physically for this game?
I think we'll be in good shape. Yeah, we should have most of the guys back.
What do you have to do to beat them? They never lose it. They lost four games there in December.
Yeah, we have to beat them at their own game. We have to play. They're a team that doesn't beat themselves, and so we can't. We can't have penalties and turnovers and things like that, mistakes, and win the ball game. We have to play a very disciplined football game, taking care of the football, controlling the time of possession, controlling the line of scrimmage.
Is the offensive line healthy now?
Yeah, they're good.
Play against them?
Yeah.
How's Griffin done since he's come back?
Good. He's, you know, he started out a little rusty, but he's been getting back with it. He's doing good.
Okay. What are the biggest things you have to do to beat them?
The biggest thing is, you know, we're going to have to be great in the red zone. We're going to have to be great in third downs on both sides of the ball. We're going to have to run it effectively and stop the run, you know, and not make mistakes. We can't beat ourselves in this game. They're a team that's not going to beat themselves, and so we can't beat ourselves either.
Are you happy with the offensive line now?
Yeah, I think they're doing good. They're doing a good job. They'll have a tough test this week, just like all the guys will.
Having the center back makes a big difference.
Yeah, he helps a lot. He's a good player.
Okay. Tough playing outdoors there, right?
Yeah, but the weather should be good. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be loud, and their crowd is good. But the weather should be fine. It should be a good day.
The fact you don't play them very often, that make it tough?
Yeah.
Like Green Bay or the Bears?
Yeah, we don't see them near as much, you know, once every 4 years. But, you know, we've done quite a bit of work on them in the off season, so we should be ready to go.
Cousins have to have a good day, right?
Yeah, but not just him. You know, a lot of people have to have good days.
Thank you.
All right, just a little college news before we go to break here. They are right now starting to name the playoff teams in the country in college football. Number one, no surprise, Alabama. Two, Clemson. Three, Notre Dame. Four, Oklahoma. Yet to hear five and six. You got to think Ohio State will be one of them, but Ohio State did not make the top. Georgia just picked number five, or named number five. I'm guessing that sixth slot will be Ohio State, and it is. So five, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Ohio State. There's your top six as we go to break. You're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, we are back. We'll take some phone calls here. I'll alternate with text messages. Let's take a phoner first. Let's see, Ken and Blaine, you've been on hold the longest. What's on your mind this morning, Ken?
Good morning. My wife and I attended the University of Minnesota Loyalty Program presentation by Coach Moscow before the Friday Gopher game, and I asked him about his recruiting philosophy, and he said, first of all, it's Minnesota first. He will recruit there. Secondly, he said he felt that the northern part of Minnesota is on an upswing, and he felt that, you know, that would be a future good recruiting area, which I think is good because I'm looking at the roster, and the current roster has 27 players. 17 of them are from the metropolitan area, and I think we're becoming a little too metropolitan-centric, and I think a little geographic diversity would be a good thing for the program.
Duluth has a theory, leave 218 alone, because they've been winning national championships with 218 area code kids. Brunovic is the latest up there that they say was the best player in college hockey last year as a freshman, and he's again this year a defenseman that kind of went under the radar because he went and played in the USHL as a forward, but they think they got a chance again. But there's a lot of people, and Motzko was a 3-2-0, but he wasn't far away, that understand that 218 area code produced a lot of great players. And you notice this past weekend, that's what it was. It was all northern teams playing suburban teams on Friday and Saturday in high school hockey, so college coaches could get out and take a look at some of those kids.
All right, let's go to a text messages a little behind there. Sid, here's a text message that said, ask Sid, in his opinion, what was Eric Kaler's most successful action that improved the athletic department at the U? So Eric Kaler winding down, 6 months to go in his presidency. What do you think, Sid, was his most important contribution to the athletics program?
The president?
Yeah.
I think it was fantastic.
Well, how about, I think they're saying individual things that he did.
Well, the big thing, he allowed them to raise the money for the big athletic facility. And he got them to hire Fleck and pay him big money. And I think a lot of the hirings on Lindy Whalen was a big deal. He had okay all those good things. They can't do it without him.
Well, and he hired Mark Coyle.
And Mark Coyle, he also hired Norwood Teague, and that's going to forever be in. People remember that for a long time, too.
But I think the question was directed at Sid, but I want to jump in here. I think that when you go back over the last five or six presidents of the University of Minnesota, Bob Brunix was very good for athletics. But I think Eric Kaler probably was closer and did more for the athletic department than any of the past five or six presidents at the University of Minnesota, with Brunix being a close second. So I think that the history will treat him well in that area. Sid, here's another text message for you. It said, ask Sid if he's had a chance to see the 30 by 30 piece on ESPN about his close personal friend, Bobby Knight.
Bobby Knight, yeah, I've seen it. And I think that ESPN goes way out of on the negative stuff. There's a lot of positive stuff on Bob Knight, too. He won a lot of NCAA championships. He got a lot of coaches hired the jobs that he got. But the big thing they go on is that choking deal. They push that.
Yeah, I have not seen it. Mike, have you had it?
I think ESPN uses and tries to manipulate an audience more than anybody in terms of, you know, Bobby Knight was one of their employees before. They've had this strange relationship with him over the years. He's no longer an employee. But anytime they think that it's almost, and I have to be careful about how I state this, but it's almost like cable news with the Kennedy assassination every year. They find a way to drum up Kennedy so that they can throw it out there and find a way to do a documentary on it. The documentaries usually don't reveal much new. And Bobby Knight, he is such a – it is so fascinating and fun to watch.
He gets eyeballs. The name has always attracted an audience.
You was in his company.
Absolutely, many times.
You were impressed with him.
Completely different than what I thought. And I went down to Lubbock, Texas with you and had dinner with him, you and he many times. Yeah. And you are right. When he and Bud Grant are together, I wish somebody would have taped that because those are unbelievable conversations.
All right, we've got another caller. Yeah, we got time to get this in. Tom in Minnetonka. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I would just, as long as you're talking about the Kaler, I was interested to see in the paper yesterday that out of the 50 candidates that they narrowed it down to or whatever, seven of them are actually not academics. And in a year when it's Lindsey Whalen and Joe Mauer and Adam Thielen, these are all Minnesota people. And I think the university is probably the most important organization in this state, which has had over 20 Fortune 500s twice, and now down to 17. I would like to see a businessman in there so that the next time we add beer to the stadium, we don't lose money at it.
Yeah, I don't know when that one will go away. The names of the candidates, there are three finalists that have been passed on to the Regents. The Regents have a meeting at 3 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon where they will talk about the three candidates. I think slightly after that we'll learn the names of the three candidates, and people will be able to weigh in on those. The idea is to have an offer and acceptance before Christmas, and I think it's going to be interesting. I happen to have been on the search committee, so I know who those people are. It was a fascinating process that was taken very seriously by people, attracted some very, very good candidates nationwide, and I think people will be impressed with the finalists. On that note, we are going to take a break. You can continue to call in. I think we can get one or two more calls in the final segment. We have one more interview, that with Minnesota Vikings coach Andre Patterson. And after that, or during, before that, we'll try to take one or two more of your phone calls. The number there is 651-989-9226, and you can text us at 808-1807. Back right after this, Sports Huddle. Sid, Dave, and Mike. Well, he's not the end, but he's a coach. Sid had a chance to catch up with Andre Patterson, who's had a major role in shaping this Viking team. Always a good interview. Let's listen in.
Is he playing as good as he did before?
Well, that's about Everson left. Griffin.
Yes, he played. He played very well on Sunday night, and you know he's got his timing back. He's got his groove back, and he looked like the old Grift.
Did it take him a while to get it going?
Well, it didn't take him a while to get going. You know, playing defensive line is not like riding a bike. You know, some of it is a lot of it is timing based. You know, especially when it comes to rushing the passer, you got to get your timing back again. And that's all it was for him to get a number of reps to get his timing back.
Okay, talk about Richardson. He's having a fantastic year.
You know, Sheldon's done a great job of coming in here and just being an open book and letting me coach him and listening to everything I have to say and trying to go out on the field and master it. And you can start this. You're starting to see the technique come together with his God-given athletic ability. And he's making more plays than he's made a year ago. And so hopefully that process continues.
What makes him so good?
He's got a combination of great quickness, power, speed, and he's really light on his feet. And he has a natural feel in the running game to find the football.
What kind of a year is Joseph having?
He's having like he always does. You know, he's big, strong, physical, and dynamic in the middle. And, you know, to me, he's the anchor of our defense. And I think he's having another good Pro Bowl year.
How about Hunter?
He's doing very well. You know, he's getting better every week. You know, on Sunday night, Green Bay treated him like he was an elite pass rusher. He had to fight through two, you know, the whole game. You know, they chipped him with the tight end. They chipped him with the running back. They had the guard come over and help the tackle, and it didn't frustrate him. He just kept rushing and kept fighting through two guys. And so I'm really pleased with how Danielle's playing.
Having Barr back, how much difference does that make?
Oh, it helps us a lot up front because they got to account for him. So, you know, one of the offensive linemen have to keep their eye on 55 to see if he's coming. So when he's on the field, he definitely helps the front four out.
How about some of the young kids? Are they making some practice? Talk about some of them.
Stephen Weatherly did an outstanding job, you know, why Everson was out. And since Everson's been back, every time he touches the field, he makes plays. And, you know, he's continuing to grow as a player. Jaleel Johnson has done a good job when he's out there on the field backing up Linville. And, you know, even though Tom's not a young guy, you know, Tom has come on the field and made a lot of plays the last 2 weeks for us and backing up Sheldon and also playing in the nickel inside with Sheldon.
Since the Ram game, your defense is number two in NFL in scoring. What's the biggest adjustments you need?
Well, I think the number one thing is the guys just stuck with the routine and the plan, and nobody panicked. You know, we just kept working on getting better and not, you know, not worrying about where we sat at that moment. You know, the NFL season is a marathon, and you can't get caught up on where you sit today. You got to continue to drive, to improve, to get better. And it's where you stand at the end that's the most important thing, not where you're sitting right now. And I think the guys bought into that. They continue to work hard. They continue to try to get better every day and listen in the meeting rooms. And when you do that, then you improve and you play better.
Got to face two great quarterbacks in the next 2 weeks. How about Brady? Have you ever gone against him?
Yeah, I've gone against Brady a bunch. You know, when I was in Cleveland and then when I was in Denver, you know, we went against the Patriots a bunch. You know, we played them three times the 3 years I was in, you know, in Denver. We had success against him, but he's the best quarterback of all time. I mean, you know, he's a tremendous leader. He gets the ball out of his hands quick. He knows where to go with the ball. So, you know, we played a guy that's going to get a gold jacket last Sunday. We're going to play a guy that's going to get a gold jacket this Sunday. And we got a guy that's probably going to have a gold jacket we play next Monday night. So it's going to end up being three in a row.
Wilson just is tough.
Yeah, he's up there with those guys too. So, you know, that's a tremendous challenge for us, but I think we look forward to having that opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, just to repeat again, that forecast for the game this afternoon, 100% chance of rain, about 50 degrees. Mike, what do you think that that's going to do? I mean, both teams play under the same conditions.
Yeah, I've never bought into that. It helps the offense because they know where they're going. That's the old theory, is that the offense knows where they're going, and so they know where they're going to make their cuts. You can slip just as easily if you know where you're going to make a cut as if you don't. I think it could affect Xavier Rhodes. What will be interesting, though, there's another Patterson in this game that people might recall, Cordero Patterson. And they've used him different ways. It was interesting this week, Mike Zimmer came out and made an admission. He said, you know, maybe we didn't use him as well as we could have now that I see how New England uses him, because they use him at running back some. And he's kind of a power back, and if it's raining like that, you might see him, because he's a big body, as we know. You might see him in the backfield quite a bit.
I just want to also say, if people may be coming out of church and not sure how things turned out in the football postseason rankings as they prepare for the bowls, number one, Alabama. Number two, Clemson. This announced on the last half hour. Number three, Notre Dame. Number four, Oklahoma. Some people hoping a Big Ten team might sneak into the top four. Did not happen. Georgia 5, Ohio State 6.
That is big money loss for Minnesota and every other team in the conference, Davis. You know, because Big Ten, it's one pool.
All shared.
Yep, and they need that Big Ten team in that Final Four, and that's a big number.
No doubt about it. Now, for people want to know how the Gophers are, where the Gophers are going, they will start to trickle out usually after about noon. There was a time when they waited until 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Looks like we may have some information on that?
No, still trying to look up information on that to find out when they're going to announce the other bowls. Yeah. They're going to announce the other the New Year's Six bowls, as they're called, first with the Peach. The Peach Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the
I think
Fiesta
Washington
Bowl.
Will go.
Washington and Ohio State are slated for the Rose Bowl.
Right.
By the way, I did want to mention Alabama, Oklahoma will be the Orange Bowl.
It's the Orange, okay.
And the Clemson Notre Dame game appears to be the Cotton Bowl.
So there you have it, Jonathan. Thanks very much. Gophers, again, you know, there's still about four bowls in play for the Gophers. I'd like to see them go to the Red Box Bowl in Santa Clara. That may be a bit of a long shot. I think the worst possible outcome would be to go back to the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit. They were there in 2015 when they beat Central Michigan. I want to thank our guest today, Scott Layden, who started things off with some nice talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Sheldon Richardson becoming a major factor in that Viking defense. Jake Odorizzi, it was fun to talk to him about all kinds of things. His familiarity with the Twins' new manager, what he thinks of all the numbers that they try to plug in, and what he does from a point of view of not just being focused on baseball. Richard Pitino, they've got a game today. Remember, that game is on television, 6 o'clock. It's a Big Ten opener. It's at Ohio State. Go for women, 3 o'clock this afternoon against Air Force. That's at the University of Minnesota. Home game seats available. Holton Hill, the surprise defensive back, contributing in big way for the Minnesota Vikings. Dan Gavitt talking about all things related to the NCAA tournament that's coming here later in the end of winter. Lou Nanny on all things hockey related. Mike Zimmer and Andre Patterson. I want to thank you for your text messages, your phone calls. The last text message is, how come you don't have more phone calls? Folks, if you don't call when we give the phone numbers, we don't have more phone calls. That's the answer to that one. We will do it all again next week. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.